This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
It's hard to know much about an NFL season 2 weeks in. We're not even 2 weeks in. Whitey and JD on 95.7 The Game. But one thing we think we know as the 49ers get ready to take on the Jets tomorrow is that they should have every opportunity to get right. Right? Yeah, no Richard Sherman. The 49ers 0-3 without Richard Sherman in their brief history with Richard Sherman. No George Kittle tomorrow, but it's the stinking Jets. All right, the Jets, who really did not comport themselves well, to say the least, last week against the Buffalo Bills. So, JD, what for the 49ers went wrong against Arizona, and how do they make those things right against the Jets? A lot of that starts with the quarterback, right?
Yeah, I think being able to run the football would cure a lot of things, but with the lack of passing game weapons, I think the running game becomes easier to stop. I mean, you have to make plays in the passing game in order to keep running the football effectively, and the 49ers were not able to do that. They couldn't keep drives going. They didn't convert a third down until, what, the 350 mark, I think, of the third quarter. And if they could have even just hit on a couple of those, I think they would have, you know, been able to take control of the game. The fourth down at the goal line, they get stopped there. If they are able to punch that in for a touchdown, I mean, I think we're having a whole different conversation at that point about everything this week, because they probably would have won the game. So, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo's got to be better. He was too out of sorts, out of sync, tentative, however you want to put it. He missed the throw that should have been the game-winning touchdown to Kendrick Bourne late. If he makes that throw, we're having a different conversation about him. But the biggest thing for me is just the fact that they didn't put their stamp on the game in the first half and the early part of the third quarter, because, you know, you don't allow the block punt, you punch it into the end zone when you're on the goal line, and you wind up having a double-digit lead in the third quarter, and you probably put the game away at that point, and it never even gets to the fourth quarter where it's you know, the game's in doubt and it's a backyard football game where you've got Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins taking advantage of a tired defense and an offense that's out of sync. The 49ers should have never let it get to the point where Arizona could beat them and kind of steal the game, because I didn't think Arizona was great until those two started making plays in the fourth quarter.
Oh, you say backyard football game. Growing up in Vallejo, I never knew anybody who had a backyard big enough to play football. We play football on the street. And then it was an issue of the sidewalks inbounds or out of bounds, and you go around the car. Be that as it may, you know, the 49ers, well, let's see here. The 49ers gave up 29 first downs last week. The Jets, who got rolled, they gave up 31 first downs. 49ers gave up 29 first downs. It looked in the second half at times like, and obviously Kyler Murray can do this to you, like maybe the defense was getting a little tired. Don't you think, if I'm Adam Gase, and I'm not, but if I'm Adam Gase, I'm considering if we get any momentum going in the second half, maybe going a little no huddle against the 49ers based on what I saw last week. What do you think of that?
That's a great call, and that's something that gave the 49ers trouble last year, and I think that is for sure going to be something that teams try to do against them moving forward. To any team that may think about doing it, that typically wouldn't do it. Any team that has a little bit of it in their game plan to begin with is gonna circle it. I think that's a phenomenal point. I think that's an area where the 49ers have struggled, and that did have an impact in the game late. Hot day. Actually, it wound up not being as hot, but it was, the smoke and those issues and just, not playing a full game. I mean, and having 3 weeks of practice as opposed to, a month and a half of practice to get ready in terms of training camp. So all of those things, I think, come into play to where it made something that the 49ers struggled with initially to begin with. They, that wound up being, an added factor because of the elements and the circumstances. There's no doubt. And I think if I'm any team, I'm looking at doing that. I know in teams that jump out to me initially, like I could see Philadelphia doing it. I could see the Rams doing it. I could see the Patriots doing it. I could see the Packers, who I think tried to do it at one point and had some success doing it. Maybe they did it after the game got out of hand, even in the championship game, as the second half of that game. And maybe it was the first game. But anyway, the Packers definitely have it in their bag to do it. So I think there are some opponents that could implement it, and the 49ers are going to have to figure out how they're going to deal with it.
As I mentioned, and as we all know, it's really difficult to know what's real early in the NFL season. For example, looking at the Jets last week, they played one game. They got torn up through the air. Josh Allen, as we've mentioned a number of times, that was the first game of his career in which he's thrown for over 300 yards. But the Jets, their run defense, they gave up 2.3 yards per carry. So does that mean, wow, Buffalo just couldn't run the ball against them? Or does it mean Buffalo didn't have to run the ball against them because they were throwing the ball so successfully? So we'll see what kind of run defense the 49ers face tomorrow, which is crucial, of course, because the 49ers love to establish the run and then play action. As we all know, everything is based off of success in the running game. Jimmy Garoppolo last week didn't have much to work with and struggled, even though his final numbers were pretty good. If you actually looked at how he played, and of course the final result indicated, left a lot of plays out there on the field. So we've been talking today about Jimmy Garoppolo. How good is he? What are the issues? What does he need to do to be better? And we've had some very interesting feedback here. We appreciate that at 888-957-9570. As I mentioned, I very much appreciate the fact that people are saying some very intelligent things. And I know this is very emotional, especially if you're a fan and that's your team. It is emotional. And I know that without emotion, sports is no fun. But some of the comments have been really keen observations rather than just, he sucks and I don't like him, or he's the greatest and I love him. So thank you for that. From the 209 here on Jimmy G, can we call George Kittle great without mentioning Jimmy G in the conversation? Somebody has to get the ball to him. That's from JV in the 209. From the 650, Jimmy has the leadership, poise, and genuine support of the teammates. It's earned. He's got the swagger. From the 510, the 49ers leave so many yards on the field. So where, JD, and I know we've talked about this, and you made a great point about Jimmy Garoppolo. Where does it start with him this week? What's the first thing Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49er offense have to do better this week against the Jets?
Well, convert some third downs would be a nice start. Stay on the field, extend some drives. Running the football would be good. I don't think it really matters how you do it. However you deem you have to do it, whether you think you got to come out and throw it because the Jets were good against the run. And I think the 49ers always initially want it to be about the running game. I think at times they get away from the running game. I think it's harder to stick with the running game once you get behind. I thought the 49ers stuck with the running game for the first three quarters, but then had some third down passes that they needed to convert that they didn't convert until, like we talked about, the final 3-4 minutes of the third quarter when they picked up their first third down conversion. I think once you get down, though, and once you get down four, you have to throw it because you become a little bit predictable if you're going to run. If you run on first down and you get 3 yards, well, then it's second and seven. What are you going to do? You're going to run again even though you're down? No, you're probably not. And then they know you're going to pass. So right. You want to come out and pass on first down. Well, if it's incomplete, then it's second and 10. What do you do? Do you run there? And then if you only get three there, it's third and seven, which is a situation you don't want. So maybe you're more apt to pass again. So I think it's a little bit trickier once you get into the fourth quarter and once you get down, even though it's down less than a score. to kind of maintain your integrity there. But I do think early in the game you can be more committed to the run. And I mean early as even first, second, third quarters, as long as you're within one score. But for me, offensively, it doesn't matter how you have to do it. You just have to do it. If tomorrow has to be a Garoppolo throws three touchdown passes and 300 yards, then okay, go get it, big boy. I mean, that's the truth of the situation. If it means you're going to run, you run. You just have to figure out a way to get a win. And on the defensive side, complete and utter physical line of scrimmage domination by the defensive line to just put the Jets on their heels.
Yeah, I said last week, and I was wrong, but I said the 49ers will beat Arizona if they establish the run and if they're able to get the pass rush even heated up just a little bit. Well, they lost. They weren't really able to do any of those things. The overall rushing numbers weren't terrible, but they were hardly dominant. So I think offensively they've got to, whatever it takes, they've got to establish some rhythm that was sorely lacking last week. I'm sure that had a lot to do with the injuries, not only to the receivers, but the interior of the offensive line. You've got Garland back at center. Ayuk, I'm really excited about seeing Ayuk at wide receiver. Sanu is a nice piece to have. We'll see how much he contributes. Maybe Jordan Reed gets more opportunities without George Kittle. But what about Jimmy G? What do we need to see from him? 888-957-9570. From the 510, his completion percentage is good, but his ball placement is terrible. Instead of getting 10 yards with an accurate pass, they would have gotten 20 yards. His balls are almost always behind the receiver. Interesting observations from the 415. What would you like to see Jimmy get better on? I would like him to gamble deep more as opposed to loft in balls in the flat and throw the ball away instead of getting happy feet and live to play another play. There were just too many times when he didn't get the ball out in time. Is that because players weren't open? Did he lack the ability? Was he not seeing things quickly enough? But it's got to start there. He's got to get the ball out, JD, because as everyone knows, Jimmy G's not the type of quarterback that can sit there and then, oh, broken play, I'm going to make something happen and roll out of the pocket. That ain't his game whatsoever.
Yeah, and I think, I think he's got to trust himself, and I think Kyle Shanahan's got to trust him a little bit more to just get out there and play free. I don't feel like he played free. He's got to play freer. He's got to play more like, hey, I'm Jimmy Garoppolo, I'm confident, I'm going to run the play, and what I think is open is where I'm going. I think at times, and we spent a good portion of the middle of the show talking about this, at times it feels like he's trying to navigate Kyle Shanahan's game plan. Hey, Kyle thinks this receiver should be open, and so he looks there as opposed to maybe trusting his instincts, and he plays too tentatively. I think to get Jimmy Garoppolo's confidence going, the answer to get Jimmy Garoppolo's confidence going is not to make the game more conservative. It's to be more aggressive and get him some throws that he can hit and get him some options where he can make the right decision. And, kind of like a free throw shooter, right? You see the ball go through, you gain confidence. Get him some passes that you know he can hit early and get some gains and get his confidence back, because I think that's the biggest thing that's plaguing him right now is a lack of confidence, tentative play. Almost you can see it. He's trying to execute what Shanahan wants him to do rather than just going out there and beating Jimmy Garoppolo and being, the gunslinger, maybe more of a risk taker. When he's been a risk taker, it's paid off for the 49ers more often than it hasn't. I think that's a reality that doesn't get talked about enough. When Jimmy Garoppolo has played free and been asked to go get it, mistakes be damned, more often than not, he's gone and gotten it. When Jimmy Garoppolo hasn't come through, it's been in those games where it's kind of 50-50. Well, you're being conservative, but go make the throw now. But we really don't want you to make the throw. And if those have been mistakes, when he's not played well and been out of rhythm, it's been those games. When Kyle Shanahan has said, hey, we need you to go win the game for us, let her rip, he's been pretty good.
Yeah, two things. When there have been mistakes, the defense quite often has been able to bail them out. And also Garoppolo has shown, one of the things he's shown that not even his detractors can dispute, is he's shown an ability, a fortitude to bounce back after making a mistake. 888-957-9570. What do we need to see from the 49er offense and Jimmy G? Let's talk to Rich in Fremont, 95.7 The Game. Hey, Rich, thanks for listening. What's up?
Hey, guys, thanks for having me on. How you doing, man?
Good.
Good. I just think the one thing that, you know, Jimmy needs to do is he needs to have a good relationship with all of the receivers when he's not on the field. Okay, because that's the thing. When you have that good relationship, you know, what happens is you communicate better when you're actually on the field. And I think that's what's happening. It's like you look at this season, last season, it's like Kittle was his main guy. And there's nothing wrong with that because Kittle's a great receiver. But he didn't have a balance, okay? In other words, where, you know, he had good communication with, you know, who I call the Bourne identity in Bourne and Richie James Jr. And some of the other receivers. So that way, if a situation like this happens where Kittle goes down, he has a good relationship and good communication with other receivers. So that way, they all know, okay, look, Jimmy's going to distribute passes to everybody, whoever's open, not just having a good relationship with one receiver and going to that one receiver every time. In other words, you got to have balance out there, okay? Defenses need to know, hey, we don't know who he's going to go to this week because he distributes the ball to all of his receivers. Because they have that one guy, it's like, okay, we'll just key in on Kittle, and then he has no other choices. And that's pretty much where he's at right now. Now they have to figure out, okay, Kittle's not here. So now who's going to be the person to communicate? Not just one. Communicate with all of them. They got Brandon Ayuk coming in this week. That's going to be something we all want to see. You know, high draft pick, you know, praise from Herman Edwards. And I just kind of feel like at this point, the lesson learned is communicate with all your receivers and distribute passes to everybody. So that way, the defenses that are coming are not going to know what's going to hit them. They don't know where it's coming from or what receiver he's going to key in on. Keep the defense guessing. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Rich. And again, thanks for listening. I will say, JD, what we've been talking about in a way, and you brought up the point, and I agree with you. I know some people have said, you guys are overanalyzing, but I think it makes a lot of sense. It's almost like there's a lack of faith, and it can be contagious. That is, when Shanahan doesn't have as much faith in Jimmy because he's made a bad throw or has a bad read, and then that Jimmy G seems to – he plays a little more tentatively, and he loses faith in his receivers, and the whole thing can start to bog down. If I'm not mistaken, that is one of the tenets of Shanahan's offense is equal distribution, right? It's like you don't know which receiver is going to get the ball because it's not a matter – and he's talked about this because people will say sometimes, how come you didn't throw it to so-and-so in that situation? And it's an oversimplification, but there's a lot of truth to the notion that in this offense, it's not about throwing it to this guy, that guy. Who's open? You have open receivers, a number of open receivers, and the quarterback sees open receivers and hits him. So I think that's an interesting point Rich makes about becoming too dependent in this offense on a particular receiver.
Yeah, I think he's got to look for Kendrick Bourne specifically more. But I think part of the equation is that Kyle Shanahan almost there's almost a specific plays and situations that he likes certain guys to get the ball in. It's almost as if so it's not like, hey, Kendrick Bourne's the one. Kendrick Bourne's out there and you know, it's almost like there's certain plays where, hey, Kendrick Bourne's gonna get this play and he views, I think, all of these receivers is so interchangeable at times that it's like, here's the Kendrick Bourne play. Here's the Jordan Reed play. Here's the George Kittle play. And yeah, there's options on every single play and guys are open, but it almost feels like there's a limited, you know, it's like, yeah, Kendrick Bourne, like they don't view Kendrick Bourne as a guy that they even want to go out and catch 10 balls. Whereas right now it's right. Like, wait a minute, he's probably your more talented guy. You know, it's kind of like the conversation we always have about Mostert, right? Well, God, give the ball to Mostert more. Mostert is so good. And they did in that game. I think he had 15 carries in week one. I might be off by one. But you know, why wasn't it 18? Why wasn't it 20? You hear that a lot. Well, and the truth is, I think Kyle Shanahan might tell you he'd rather have it be 12 and that 15 was a bump up. But he feels there's a certain amount of usage for each player to where you get the best out of everybody and that so many of these guys are similar talent levels that it's like he's just making sure. It's kind of like the baseball team that's, you know, playing matchups and platoons. And, you know, you never really give a guy an opportunity to go out there and flourish because you're so situation specific. I think there's a little bit of a hint of that with the 49ers offense, which prevents them from using who the most talented pieces are on that given day. And I relate that back to Bourne specifically. Last week, Kendrick Bourne, without question, was the 49ers' most talented wide receiver on the football field. So maybe he should have been targeted a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of using your personnel efficiently. I think it's about efficiency of your offense. Jerick McKinnon, by the way, had a nice game, right, in the last game. So it'd be nice to see more of that. And Dante Pettis, you mentioned that they don't see Bourne as a guy who's supposed to catch 10 balls a game. Is Pettis going to catch 10 balls all year? Very underwhelming performance from Pettis in a game in which they could have used something from him, JD.
I'll say this. If Pettis is going to catch 10 balls this year, he better catch 6 of them tomorrow. Because, no, I mean it.
I know.
Like, if he's going to... He better catch 6 or 7 of them tomorrow, because if he doesn't, I think it's trending toward he's not going to be on the team. And
right.
just look at the depth chart. I mean, the 49ers are, injuries play a role in this. If we get 3-4 weeks down the line and Deebo Samuel can't come back, which, we haven't talked about that, but, Kyle Shanahan did use setback. And anytime there's a Jones fracture, Jones fractures have a history of setbacks. Jones fractures have a history of you think it's going to be fine, and then it's not. Trent Taylor, perfect example of that last year. Kevin Durant, we talked about this in June. Kevin Durant, had the Jones fracture and came back, and then something went right, and he had to have another surgery. So, I think there's a lot of optimism that Deebo Samuel's going to come back, but they thought he was going to be, could have played last week at the beginning of last week, leading into practice. And then there was soreness, and the soreness didn't go away, and now he's going to miss 3 games. Like, it's not a lock that he's coming back at the end of the 3 games that he has to miss. So that's something to keep an eye on. I think there's a lot of people that are thinking, well, he needs a little more time. The Jones fracture is that can be a real problem. But assuming he does come back, that said, Deebo, Ayuk, Bourne, those three, and then Sanu, and then Trent Taylor. I mean, if the 49ers are healthy, that's 5 right there. So Pettis is right back in the category of he might be on the roster still, but he surely isn't going to be somebody that's active on game day, which is where he finished the year last year. And if the Niners deem that they need to go get another receiver, then he's off the roster completely at that particular point in time. So to your initial question of, do you think he catches 10 balls? He better catch half of them at least tomorrow, because he's trending toward being off the roster here before the end of the year.
888-957-9570. Dan in San Jose joins us, 95.7 The Game. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hey, fellas. Great to listen to your show. Really enjoy it. Just wanted to make a couple of comments, ask a question, following up a comment. The comment is, anybody that's listening to this broadcast, including you two guys, should go and watch the film of the 49ers Seattle game in Seattle last year, and you will see how Kendrick Bourne single-handedly nearly killed us in that game. He was absolutely horrific. And if he's a guy we're all thinking we need to depend on, we're in major, major trouble. The second problem, the question I have, and I'd like you to comment on my first point, the second thing I wanted to ask you is, how did our rookie defensive tackle from Mississippi State play last week?
Thank you, Dan. I know, let's see, we're talking about Kinlaw last week? Yeah. I know he graded out very well. I know watching the game, he was not overwhelming, but Pro Football
Focus. He also didn't go to Mississippi State.
Yeah, that's why I was a little confused. Thank you, JD. That's why I was confused. Who are we talking about now? But I know that he actually, I think he had.
South Carolina, by the way. Just
yeah,
that up.
Thank you. I was like, wait, what? He had a pretty good game. He wasn't DeForest Buckner, but he had by all accounts, he had a pretty good debut.
Yeah, and as far as Kendrick Bourne goes, I'm talking about tomorrow. I'm talking about right now, because you're shorthanded. I'm not saying Kendrick Bourne is a one, by any stretch, but Kendrick Bourne right now is the best wide receiver the 49ers have. And Ayuk may walk on the field tomorrow and be the best wide receiver the 49ers have. I think there's a possibility we I think there's a possibility that one of the storylines coming out of tomorrow is, oh my God, Brandon Ayuk is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wow, Brandon Ayuk is really good. And all of a sudden, you know, because we live in the extremes, right? The Niners have no receivers. Oh my God, Brandon Ayuk is really good. So I think that's on the table the next 2 weeks. I want to make sure, and we haven't talked a lot about him, but yeah, I mean, if you trust those that watched him in training camp, you know, look, I don't want to put too much on his plate before he's ever played a game, but I know Herm Edwards was, you know, high praise. I mean, if Brandon Ayuk is good, that's a game changer and a season changer for the 49ers.
And it's been a long time since the 49ers have had that type of receiver. We also haven't talked about Dee Ford's neck injury, fingers crossed there. And we haven't talked about this, although I've mentioned it, coming up. Yes, and he's in the division. He's a great quarterback and one of the greatest coaches of all time. Says, this guy's underrated. What do you make of that? Next, it's Whitey and JD, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Part of the problem for the 49ers last week may have just been that Arizona is as good as a lot of people think they're going to be this year. It's Whitey and JD on 95.7 The Game. Coming up, can the 49ers count on anybody to give them any help in the division tomorrow? But JD, how about that notion? I know you and I talked about it last week. And one of the reasons I was down on Arizona, I was getting tired of all the Arizona Cardinal hype, and I thought it was a little extreme and out of bounds. But I know the 49ers win that game if they don't give Arizona so many chances, but that was a big win for the Arizona Cardinals. I have to look at them a little more seriously after last week. How about you?
Yeah, I don't, just based on the game of last week. And by the way, the 49ers, just to make sure, they've just announced their roster moves for tomorrow. Dee Ford is out. Uh-oh. Tomorrow. Dee Ford was questionable with the neck spasms. And, yeah, Hronas Grasu has been added from the practice squad again. You can designate players to be brought up for game day. So Grasu comes up, and Dee Ford is out. So
that ain't good.
Just no.
He's trash.
It also makes me wonder if he made the trip or not. I would imagine he did. But because I know typically when a player gets downgraded like that on a Saturday, the reason that player would have to be downgraded would be because he didn't make the trip, as opposed to just ruled as not playing. So that's I don't know that that's the case for sure, but that stay tuned to that storyline over the course of the next couple of days. And remember, the 49ers are gone, you know, until next Sunday night, when they take on the Giants. So this could be an indicator that maybe he's going to be out for at least the next 2 weeks. Well, remains to be seen, though.
Yeah, neck spasms would be one thing. And I know Robert Saleh said yesterday that we're not worried about it. And if it's neck spasms, that's one thing. I thought it was reported yesterday that he was going to undergo an MRI. And if he's out based on anything that an MRI showed up, and I don't know if that's the case, but there's potential bad news there, so fingers crossed as far as Dee Ford goes. Now, Dan from San Jose just called, and he was asking about Kinlaw, and I mentioned some Pro Football Focus numbers. JD, do you have those that breakdown of Kinlaw and how well he actually played last week, although it wasn't always obvious?
Yeah, Kinlaw had the third highest, this according to Pro Football Focus. Pro Football Focus had him as the third highest grade for rookies. He was at 81.4 in week one, and that was better than DeForest Buckner in week one. Now, the one question, I have to have Sterling clarify this, because Sterling gave us this number. Was that Buckner's grade for this week in week one, or was that Buckner's week one overall? Okay, so that is good. That I wanted to make sure I clarify that, because I wasn't sure. I thought that was in comparison to Buckner's first game in his career back in 2016. So that's a good sign.
Yeah.
But the 49, here's my thing with Kinlaw. The Niners need him to be dominant the way Buckner was last year. And look, to no fault of Kinlaw's own, he's not ready to do that yet. Now, eventually he will. You know, that's the plan, whether that's by the end of this year or next year. Eventually they believe he can be every bit as good, maybe in different ways. But it does bode well for his ability to be a quick learner and a player that can be a force very soon. So I think that's a good sign. But yeah, they need Kinlaw to be better than what Buckner was the last couple of years, and in particular last year.
Yeah, that may take a while for him to get to that point. As for Dee Ford, and hopefully he's fine, but I mean, you look at how much time he spent injured. This may be a little premature, JD, but Dee Ford is becoming the 49ers Jeff Samardzija, huh?
No.
I know you're not a big Samardzija guy. No,
I don't want to go there. No,
I just
intentionally
overstated it. No, of course not. I kid, because I know you're not a big Samardzija guy. But the point is, Dee Ford, it's unfortunate how little he's been able to stay on the field for the 49ers and how much they benefit
from
his contributing.
It's a bad thing for the 49ers that Dee Ford hasn't been able to play.
Yeah.
You could make a case that Samardzija not being able to pitch has been a blessing in disguise for the Giants.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that clarification. Tomorrow, can the 49ers count on anybody to give them some help in the division? Because the 49ers, when was the last time they were all alone at the bottom of the NFC West? Hey, yes?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I wanted to make this point, and it's along the lines of what we're talking about the Cardinals. We got off on the roster moves and the breaking news with Dee Ford. The Cardinals, they got the win against the 49ers, and it's a huge win, and I'll tell you why. The Cardinals now play Washington, Detroit, Carolina, and the Jets. So Arizona, in getting that win, now has set themselves up to where, I think Arizona being a dangerous team would lead toward, hey, they're going to win some games that you think they might lose. They're going to lose some games you think they might win. But we're going to get all of that tested out these next 4 weeks with Arizona. But they've got an opportunity to be 4-1 or even 5-0 all of a sudden, just based on the opponents and the two place of finish games, right? So the two games that are not the games that everybody plays among your divisional opponents, they play two of those games, week 3, week 4, Detroit and Carolina. So just in comparison to the 49ers, the 49ers play the Packers and the Saints as their two games that tie with the Cardinals playing the Lions and the Panthers. So the Cardinals have their one up on the Niners head-to-head, and then they have their two games that are easier, at least on paper, on the schedule coming up. So that's a potential for, you know, that's where things can swing from year to year, and that's obviously something that's in play after the Cardinals wind up getting that head-to-head win. So keep an eye on Arizona now. These next couple of weeks, because I think it's going to tell the story. Are they dangerous or are they for real? We're about to find out.
So you've actually answered part of my question here, looking at the other teams in the division and who they play this week. Can the 49ers count on anybody for some help? And you don't think Riverboat Ron and his WFT, Washington football team, is going to give the 49ers any help against the Arizona Cardinals?
No, although, again, that's not, I would pick Arizona to win that game, but that's exactly the kind of game that a team like Arizona would lose if Arizona is a dangerous team but not a legitimate contender, right? A dangerous team that's not a legitimate contender would beat the Niners and then lose to Washington. A dangerous team that's not a contender would beat the Niners, beat Washington, lose to the Lions in Carolina, beat the Jets. You know, but a team that's a legitimate contender is going to be 4-1 after five games at worst, with the game in hand against the Niners and then Washington, Detroit, Carolina, and the Jets. Like Arizona right now, if Arizona's for real, then they should be 4-1 or 5-0. Like,
well,
point blank.
If you believe in trap games, and not everybody does, but that's a classic trap game scenario for Arizona. Opening against the NFC champs and then playing Arizona. So we'll see. How about the Eagles taking on the Rams? I think Aaron Donald's going to have another very productive day, especially the way the Eagles gacked a lead against a Washington football team last week. Do you think the 49ers can count on the Eagles to give them any divisional help against the Rams tomorrow, JD?
I think they could. I think that's kind of a 50-50 game, no doubt. I think the Rams, you know, they're another team that I looked at their schedule early. The Rams have two tough games coming up. They're at Philly, at Buffalo, but then they play the Giants and Washington. And look, Washington won their first game and beat the Eagles. So I don't want to be totally down on Washington, and I love Ron Rivera. But the Rams are kind of set up to where maybe they could be, you know, 3-2 or 4-1 when they play the 49ers on October 18th at Levi's Stadium. So, you know, the Niners are going to have to work their way out of this hole. Philly could win that game, though, and Philly is desperate because they had an awful loss week one. Philly has expectations to be a division contender in the East, and losing to Washington right out of the chute with a 17-0 lead, that's a bad look for them.
Yeah, that was a huge win Sunday night for the Rams in their new stadium, their new empty stadium. The way their roster is set up, they need Ramsey and Aaron Darnold to play, just be dominant every week, and they both played very well. So it was a huge win for them. So I don't think the 49ers can count on the Eagles for much help. We'll see. And then the other game, Sunday night, the Patriots against the Seahawks. The Patriots, so interesting. Last week we were talking about the fact that, hey, you know what? With Cam at quarterback, the New England offense is going to look a lot like Tim Tebow's old Denver Bronco offense. And New England got the win against the Seahawks tomorrow night. Bill Belichick says that Russell Wilson is underrated. Quote, honestly, I think he's in a way underrated by the media or the fans. I don't know, but I don't really see anybody better than this player. This guy is a tremendous player. Bill Belichick, again, on Russell Wilson, quote, I don't think there's a better deep ball passer in the league in terms of decision-making and accuracy. He attacks literally every inch of the field, end quote. Some of that is what coaches do. Bill Walsh was an expert at that, really playing up the competition, no matter who it was. But I don't doubt that Belichick, at least to some degree, is being very sincere here. Did you know, JD, that Russell Wilson, to this point, with all his accomplishments, he has received a grand total of zero MVP votes? Russell Wilson has a total of zero MVP votes for his career. Surprising, no?
That is incredible, and that is a surprise. Because there have been years where it has been viewed as he is the only thing Seattle's got going for him, and I think that's been a little overblown at times the last few years. I think Seattle's a more talented team than they get credit for. That's not taking anything away from Russell Wilson, who's tremendous and should give any 49er fan nightmares, just based on the fact that no matter what the 49ers do to beat that team, Russell Wilson always seems to have the ball with a chance to beat them in the final seconds. Even though the Niners made the biggest play of the season last year to beat them, it's like, my God, they should have won that game going away. And a big reason why they didn't was Russell Wilson.
One of the reasons he doesn't have MVP votes is because you don't get MVP votes for handing the ball off. And we know that Pete Carroll loves to run the ball. Russell Wilson's been fabulous, but we know that Pete Carroll loves to run the ball first, pound the rock, run. This year, at least based on 1 week, it looks like maybe he's going to, quote-unquote, hashtag let Russ cook a little bit. So that'll be interesting, to say the least, to see what Russell Wilson is able to do if they give him more opportunities. But maybe something the 49ers don't want to see. Russell Wilson, underrated. I'm wondering, JD, anybody else in the league currently that you would say that guy, quarterbacks now, underrated, overrated? In my opinion, and this is not a popular view, I think Matthew Stafford is a little bit underrated because I think he's a very prolific passer on a bad team, and I think quarterbacks sometimes get more than their fair share of the blame when they play on a team that hasn't won. He has been in the playoffs three times. He hasn't won a playoff game. In my opinion, Stafford is somewhat underrated, although I know I'm not saying he's anywhere near as good as Russell Wilson.
Two quarterbacks that I have on the might be overrated list, and I'll maybe find somebody that's underrated. I want to see more of Teddy Bridgewater, possibly as somebody underrated. But the two overrated that come to mind Dak Prescott, to me, is at the top of the list.
What?
In terms of overrated. Yeah. I mean, you talk about him being a $40 million a year quarterback. I mean, you got to win something. You got to win something at some point. I mean, elevate your team and win a game. And it's always seemingly about the coaching, and it's never really about Dak Prescott. The other quarterback that I think it's time to start wondering about, believe it or not, is Carson Wentz. You know, he led them to that, to be in the position to be in, you know, to be set up for that one seed, and then Nick Foles won the Super Bowl. But since then, it's been kind of for Carson Wentz. So I don't, you know, I don't know that we know the full story as to what he is yet, but I think he's a little overrated at this point, where it's, all right, price of admission, you got Carson Wentz, you're going to win 10 games. Clearly that's not the case. And for them to have a bad loss their first game, it's like, okay, it's kind of the same thing. Elevate. You know, elevate your team to greatness. Let's see it. So those are two I would put in the overrated category. As far as underrated, there's nobody really that comes to the top of my mind at this point other than maybe Teddy Bridgewater.
Feels great, baby.
Do you think Philip Rivers, and again, I'm not sure this is a very popular view. I think it's probably 50-50. Philip Rivers, now, of course,
he might stink, by the way.
I was going to ask you if you think he's a Hall of Famer. Is Philip Rivers a Hall of Famer?
I think he probably is, but that's not even where I was going. I think he probably is, but watching them play, and he showed he was pretty bad last year in a lot. Like watching the Colts, like it was like watching a Charger game it looked exactly like a lot of Charger losses where weird things are happening and he's out there barking and things are going wrong, and then he throws a horrible interception that you know kind of wrecks the game, but it's not totally his fault, but the game was so far off schedule that they should have been in position where he didn't have to make the throw that was awful. That kind of game followed Philip Rivers to the Colts, and I think at that point the only thing you can do is say, well, maybe it's Philip Rivers' fault. I also think he might just be cooked. He might be done. And I love Philip Rivers. Philip Rivers is one of my favorite quarterbacks
really?
To watch. Yeah, just to watch because he's so demonstrative. I've often joked with people, Philip Rivers looks, not talent or whatever, but Philip Rivers, all the pre-snap and moving around and yelling and some of the antics and like screaming and clapping, and he's mad at his teammates, he's mad at the ref, he's pumping. I've often said Philip Rivers looks like I would look if I were an NFL quarterback. Like just the demeanor on the field would, like that's like nothing else, but just the demeanor on the field, that would be so I think he's fun as hell to watch. I think at one point he was obviously great. I think he might be done.
We had this discussion yesterday in the morning show about whether he's a Hall of Famer or not. Of course, Lorenzo Neal used to play with him, so Lorenzo Neal's, yeah. You don't know how much of that is what he honestly thinks and how much of that he's sticking up for someone that he knows. But he's 5-6, I think, in the postseason, so he has gotten teams of the postseason. His numbers is very, very prolific passer. To me, I'm not saying he's first ballot, but to me, if you just look, I know some people look at him and say, well, he's not what I think of as a Hall of Famer. In basketball, people do that sometimes with a player like Dwight Howard. And at some point, it's like, it doesn't matter what you think of the guy. You have to look at what he's accomplished. In this case, Philip Rivers. He's put up Hall of Fame numbers. So we'll see how it goes. I think Philip Rivers is going to be in the Hall of Fame, whether you like him or not. Obviously, you, JD, you do. But that game last week, that was, to me, I was as surprised by that result as any. And, of course, week one, as we've said today a number of times, you're never sure what you're going to get. But I thought Philip Rivers going to the Colts are a team taking a shot this year. Last year, their secondary, inconsistent player quarterback probably kept them out of the playoffs. So they bring in Philip Rivers. Wow, they got a shot this year getting into the playoffs, maybe winning a game or two. Against a Jacksonville team that looks like, you know, maybe they're really more concerned about getting Trevor Lawrence. And Jacksonville won that game. Stunning. So, yeah, maybe Philip, he ain't got nothing left in the tank. And Gardner Minshew last week, he threw one incompletion. So Jacksonville's a team that I think maybe are certainly more talented than I thought they were. And Gardner Minshew is a guy, we're talking about quarterbacks overrated, underrated. I'm not even sure what I think of him after last week.
Yeah, I mean, it's left open, I think, for further discussion. There's no doubt. I mean, I don't love Minshew. I mean, he does have flashy wins, it seems like. Like, there's a, whoa, how'd they win that game? And Minshew was awesome. And then, you know, but then he's really not that good if you ever, like, watch him every week. But I mean, that's a nice win. And you're right, that result surprised me, if it were not for the fact that I feel like the Chargers had lost games like that at least 2, 3, 4 a year, even in years where they were really good. Like, that just seemed like the quintessential Chargers Philip Rivers loss, right? Game they shouldn't win, you know, bunch of stuff happening, interception in the fourth quarter, he didn't play well. Like, it just, I don't know. So maybe it's Philip Rivers. Maybe that's on Philip Rivers at this point.
Maybe so. Another guy that I think playing right now that, in my opinion, is overrated, and he hadn't been there that long, but clearly his team is hoping for a lot more from him sooner rather than later. I know he got the win Thursday, and now he's got a new coach, and they're moving him, you know, out of the pocket a little bit, moving the pocket. Baker Mayfield, to me, there is no way, in my opinion, he should have been the first pick in the draft.
I think he stinks.
No way. I'm not saying he stinks, but I don't think he's going to be the guy for them going forward. That whole franchise, for whatever reason, to me, they've been overrated. Now, it was a nice win for them against Cincinnati, but Baker Mayfield, to me, is overrated.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. My big takeaway from that game was Joe Burrow looked good.
Yes.
I know we focus on Mayfield, and that's fine. I think he is going to wind up – they're going to wind up being a disappointment again this year. Mm-hmm. But the big takeaway for me out of that game, even though they lost, was, wow, Joe Burrow looks the part, and that was his second game. And so I think there's a bright future there. Obviously a long way to go, but I left going, all right, I think the Bengals might have something here.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it's still percolating, and it's going to be a while before it all comes together, but it's very interesting the way they, for years they had success with Marvin Lewis, right, a defensive coach, and then last year they bring in Zach Taylor, and they got rid of Andy Dalton, and now they've got their quarterback, and so they're kind of reimagining what they're all about in this new era, this offensive-minded era. But I agree with you, Joe Burrow was sensational last week. Thursday night in the win over the Cleveland Browns. I'm with you, Cleveland. Overrated. Baker Mayfield, overrated. Baker Mayfield, the only really thing he's done well, I think, is, to be honest, I think his Home Depot commercials are pretty good. The FanDuel ones, I think, but the Home Depot ones are pretty good. As far as what he's done on the football field, he ain't shown me nothing yet other than the ability to consistently throw the ball to people wearing the other team's uniform. I think that's 8 games in a row now he's thrown an interception, JD.
Terrible.
Couple quick hitters for you. Baker Mayfield or Jimmy G?
Jimmy G in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat.
Jimmy G or Sam Darnold?
Jimmy G, yeah. Two heartbeats. Only needed one extra heartbeat on it. Sam Darnold is, well, I don't know. Sam Darnold, and he, you know, we talk about Jimmy G could be more mobile. Well, a statue is more mobile than Sam Darnold.
Jimmy G or Kirk Cousins?
Jimmy G, Cousins, I keep, you know, everyone says he's overrated, he's no good. So I keep thinking, well, people must be wrong, because when everyone says something, they're wrong. So watch this. But it's the same thing, right? The numbers, you look at his numbers at the end of the year, you go, wow, he's pretty good. His team underperformed, but his numbers were good. What about you on that one?
Jimmy G. Yeah. No, Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy G or Jared Goff? And this is an interesting one, because 2 years ago you would have said Goff. Last year you would have said Jimmy G. Now after one game, what is it this year?
It's Jimmy G, and I'm higher on Goff than a lot of people. And I think that you know, talk about a system fitting what he does, and I've seen him have some big games and make some big-time throws. I think he's a good quarterback, but he lacks – a little something. One of the things that Jimmy G does have when he's playing well, that swagger, that confidence, I haven't seen enough of that from Goff. Do you know what I'm saying there? Do you see that as well?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And here's the last one for you. I know exactly what you're saying. Last one for you. Right now, Jimmy G or Kyler Murray?
Kyler Murray? Kyler Murray is the future of football. It was interesting last week. A couple times you could see, wow, he is small, but boy, you got a lot of options with Kyler Murray. You with me on that one?
Yeah, it's going to be Kyler Murray for sure. It may already be there. I don't know that they've crossed paths yet on the chart.
All right. Thank you, JD. Back with you tomorrow at 3. Thanks for listening. Fox Sports Radio is next on 95.7 The Game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.